RN has partnered with the National Museum of Australia on a project to discover which objects tell us the best stories about Australian history. You can contribute an object that you think reveals an aspect of Australian history, and in a moment I'll give you details of how you can join in, but this next story might help inspire you. Museums and historical societies around the country are also submitting objects and artefacts from their collections. And today's item comes from the National Museum of Australia, though it does have a strong connection to the city of Melbourne. And that's actually a bit of a clue, but I'm not going to tell you anything else. I'll leave that to the museum's Jennifer White. See if you can guess what she has.
Effectively, this object is an empty bag, but I think it's full of stories. It's much like a big wallet, so it's brown on the outside and it's about 20 centimetres high and 20 centimetres wide and with nice rounded edges and a very sturdy green shoulder strap. And when you open it, the inside's divided into small compartments. And it was a tram conductor's bag, so it helped conductors selling tickets on trams. And almost every Australian has an experience of riding on a tram, many from Melbourne, which is no surprise because Melbourne has the largest urban tram network in the world. And many people forget that trams were once a common sight throughout many Australian towns and cities, from Kalgoorlie to Rockhampton, Launceston to Hobart, Adelaide to Sydney and Bendigo to Ballarat. But after the gold rush boom, Melbourne was the biggest and the wealthiest city in Australia. And if you were to buy a ticket from a tram conductor in the 1890s in Melbourne, chances are they'd be Irish Catholic. So this bag also reminds us of a time of sectarian division which separated Catholics and Protestants. And I love the logo because it looks like lightning bolts, and that's what everyone wants public transport to be, as quick as lightning. So this is a pretty standard shaped bag, but the logo gives it a distinction. So the tram conductor's bag is not really a fashion statement. It needs to be practical and it needs to be comfortable, and that it is when you put the green shoulder strap around you. You can see that it's really comfortable. I wish my own handbag was like this. But of course, most people associate handbags with women, so when students find out this is a tram conductor's bag, they then refer to it as a man bag. Perhaps it is the ultimate man bag, but we can't forget that there were female tram conductors as well, particularly from World War II onwards. And one of the best moves or suggestions for, I think, any bag, let alone a tram conductor's bag, was to install an internal electric light, which would presumably help conductors give the right change in Melbourne during a blackout because of World War II. But I would suggest that little electric light switches in anyone's handbag would be a great help at any time. The bags were passed down through generations because they're quite sturdily built, and they would have to be sturdy because I'm not sure how heavy they would get at, say, the beginning of the shift when you're cashed up with coins. And so trammies would be treading the board for many hours, so it would need to be, you know, functional and comfortable, and that's exactly what it is. It also makes tram conductors somewhat of a target at times, so trams were sometimes held up. So some conductors lost their bag to thieves. Most of Australia's tram conductors' jobs have now been replaced by automatic ticketing machines. And in Melbourne in the 1990s, it was a great site of massive union action and a variety of protests, including one memorable incident where a tram conductor male troop got together and did a full Monty on the steps of the Melbourne GPO, which saw one conductor reduced down to nothing but a strategically placed tram bag. This tram bag is towards the end of the tram conductor's reign in Melbourne. It's from Melbourne, and it was used from the 1980s onwards. So probably one of those conductors that lost their jobs in the 1990s would have used this tram bag last. Many people think, well, it's just an empty bag. But in fact, there are so many stories that lay somewhat secret inside the bag. But if you give it a little bit of thought, you know, it tells a lot of Australian history and a lot of Australian stories, and is a great reminder of particularly Melbourne's Connies, who were characters in themselves. I think there were singing conductors, dancing conductors, and they were were sometimes described as people's best friends because they were there generally to help you. If you had a lot of bags getting on a tram, wouldn't it be great to see a Connie who could help you?
So follow the sun, which way the wind blows, when this day is done.
Xavier Rudd performing live for some lucky passengers on a Melbourne tram as part of a wonderful project called Tram Sessions. And before him, Jennifer White from the National Museum of Australia with the tram conductor's or Connie's bag. It's one object that we think helps tell a story about Australia's past, but you're bound to have some too, and we'd love it if you would let us know. It doesn't have to be a big object or a valuable one. We want to hear the story it tells. So if you're intrigued, check out some of the objects that people have already sent in by heading to the Hindsight webpage. Just click there on the link to Object Stories, and that's at abc.net.au/radionational, and look for Hindsight. Next week on the program, a story about what happens when history clashes with the needs of a modern city. And it's a battle that's taking place right in the middle of Sydney's heritage-listed suburbs of Millers Point and Dawes Point. They're both right around the corner from the Harbour Bridge, and they can both trace their origins back to the First Fleet. The waterfront area of these suburbs is known colloquially as Walsh Bay, but now the residents and businesses of Walsh Bay want to become a separate suburb, severing them from the colonial heritage of Millers and Dawes Points. So next week on the program, historians, residents and business owners give us their views, which are quite heavily opposed.
We've had festivals, we have websites, we promote public events such as Vivid, Sydney Writers Festival, the Biennale. The businesses themselves obviously have their own campaigns. They're all promoting the location of Walsh Bay and the beautiful harbourside suburb within the CBD. There's a lot of investment from the businesses in promoting and branding of Walsh Bay.
People up the hill from here, the Millers Point residents, and I have spoken to them, really believe that the residents and the businesses of Walsh Bay want to get away from them and their public housing reputation. Is that what's behind this campaign?
The residents and the businesses of Walsh Bay strongly support the Millers Point, Dawes Point communities. We regularly donate to local charities, including the Millers Point Youth Partnership and the Darling House Aged Care Facility. We actively promote the activities of the KGV Centre. We every year donate Christmas presents to the local underprivileged children in the area. There is no ends of efforts by the Walsh Bay community to develop a close relationship with the Millers Point and Dawes Point communities.
So this is more about establishing an identity, a business identity that can be marketed to tourists.
That's right, and to give an identity to what is going to become a very important cultural hub within the CBD.
I look at place names as historical records that we can interrogate and research, like just like any other record. They can reveal the intentions of the place namers and the people who've made the place over time. What did they want to do? And often in the name itself is an indication of what they intended. And they have them for a long time, which is one reason why it's very emotional. This can often be seen where people will propose to change a name, and one of the reactions to that will be a denigration of those who propose to change it. So, look, it's just about real estate values, you know. It is actually contesting the metaphor that people are presenting. Is this about a place where fishing and industrial things used to happen, or is it a place where the real estate values are rising and we all have waterfront views? It's embedded in the name. The name has meanings. It's much more than a label. I think it's important that we understand these.
So, what's in a name? The battle over Walsh Bay, next Sunday at 1 here on Hindsight. I'm Lorena Allam. I look forward to your company then. My thanks today to Timothy Nicastri and Charlie McCune. This is RN.